Welcome to Libertarian Counterpoint. I am your host, James Just, and with me today is Mr. Jason McPhee from the Knuckleheads of Liberty. All right, Jason, we've got some interesting topics, and we're calling this the consequences of hypocrisy. So we've got an annual firearms registration bill faces increased flack as it's kind of working its way through the committee because this thing has some really strange, additions to it. It's completely changing the way we have gun registration. Essentially, they now want you to register your gun the same way you register your car every year, is what they're trying to do. Let's see if we've got some talking points on this. There we go. Yeah. So it's an annual registration requirement. So instead of the current one-time registration, your gun owners would be required to register their firearms. I can speak. With the California Department of Justice, and they haven't released how much that's going to cost, so you don't actually know how much your yearly firearm is going to be based upon the value, the age, who knows. So it's like registering your car. They don't know what the costs are going to be. There are some things that are exempted, right? So antiques are allegedly exempted, and oddly enough, guns owned by departments or state agencies and police officers' duty weapons are exempt from this thing. So the government doesn't have to pay attention to its own rules. Yet again, the government doesn't have to register their guns, but we do. If you are failed to properly register your firearm, it's a $1,000 fine. So if you're a poor person who can't afford the registration, you're going to be even poorer. And the alleged purpose is accountability, right? They're saying that the registration aims to provide better data and the number of firearms in private hands. Now, it is half true. The whole point of this is to have better data on who owns guns so they can come get them later. Yeah. That's the real long-term goal of this, and we know it because we know that the Democrats have a long history of wanting to reimagine the Second Amendment, right? They want to reimagine what it says.
Well, it seems like this is about as bad as it could be because, you know, gun owners have always feared that there would be some registry that they would eventually want to do to be able to potentially confiscate guns, as they've done in some countries, like I think Australia did something like that. But now they figured out a sneaky way to make you pay for it as well.
Yeah. So, not only going to register your gun, they're going to make you pay for your yeah. loss of civil rights.
Yeah, so it's just absolutely... I can't believe this will pass muster on the, with the Supreme Court on the Second Amendment. I mean, we literally just saw where they had an illegal immigrant who had a weapon, and he was, it was one of the northern states, I think it happened in, he was arrested for having a firearm that clearly was unregistered, and then the Supreme Court recently said, I think it was maybe they tied it to the Bruin decision or something like that that happened in the last few years, but they said that, well, actually that illegal immigrant has a right to a firearm. So the idea that they're going to allow that, but then California wants to go after every taxpayer, it just seems crazy.
And like most of these California laws, it's going to fall the hardest on those poor people in the neighborhoods who need to defend themselves the most. It's the single mother in a poor neighborhood who's trying to defend herself, and her child is the ones who's going to suffer because she's the one who can't afford the registration or the fine. That's the real danger, and the long-term danger in this. And it's, it's scary how much they want the Democrats, in this particular case, want to reimagine the Constitution. It's not because we've seen it. This is the Second Amendment, but they also want to reimagine the First, which we'll talk about next week with, your right to speak freely, your right to criticize the government, to criticize government officials. These are rights that are under threat.
It's funny because I believe they have extra charges now, and you have to have a license just to purchase ammunition, I think, in the state of California now. I think that passed recently. And it's getting to the point where if the Second Amendment requires that you pay a fee for all of these different things for the state to allow you to exercise your Second Amendment, when will they start doing that with the First Amendment? Right? When will they start charging you for words and maybe dangerous words and only some people can speak it? You got to pay for your license to speak.
Yeah. Common sense speech control, right? That's shall not be infringed. But common sense gun control, well, your right to speak should not be infringed. But common sense speech control, what's the difference? So if they're willing to reimagine one amendment, they're going to be willing to reimagine the others. And that's kind of the long-term danger. And we're talking about dangers, long-term dangers. Recently, California has implemented its $20 an hour minimum wage for fast food restaurants. But Gavin Newsom's restaurant, who he owns, he was the founder, is only offering $16 an hour wages. Now, he's not a fast food. They're not required to under the law. But as a founder of this place, you know, shouldn't you have set a moral code where you're going to do the right thing by your employees from a structural organization where you pay them above your wage? Don't you properly pay your... And this is not a restaurant in a cheap place of town. This is not some place in Oak Park where, you know...
Yeah, and that was part of the interesting part about the story is that this was a high-end restaurant. So the idea that you're literally not meeting the minimums that you're saying that mom and pop. So well, I guess there are some exceptions for how small a business can be that some of them maybe don't have to comply. But for anybody that is like some franchise owner
if you're a franchise owner of one Wendy's, you're actually a mom and pop. But this law isn't going to treat you as a mom and pop.
Exactly.
They're treating you like a corporate-owned store, while the governor's store. And let's be honest, this is in trust. He doesn't have day-to-day decision makings, but he, as a founder, he should have implemented this kind of morality as a fundamental level of his business, right? And this is in Olympic Valley, California. So it's the Plump Jack Cafe in Olympic Valley, California. So this is not an inexpensive place to live, but yet he's not willing to pay his employees. His company isn't willing to pay his employees his own morality. Yet again, the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody else needs to act as morally as I say you should, but I don't have to. I can go and have dinner while everybody else is locked down. I can pay my employees a non-living wage. They're the ones who say $20 an hour is the living wage, right? They're paying less. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me, Jason. Maybe it's just me.
Well, now that we know that he has this Plump Jack Cafe, it would be interesting to see if they bake their own bread on the premises, too, because that was one of the outs that Newsom had put into that minimum wage law for his buddy who owned Panera Bread, I guess, that if you baked and sold your own bread, for some strange reason, you didn't have to comply with the same minimum wage law that all of the other fast food.
Yeah, and they're creating a bunch of new exemptions under that minimum wage law, which, again, if you're creating exemptions, then the fundamentals are wrong, right? And so, anyway, we're talking about fundamentals, and fundamentals of peace. Mr. Richard Fields talking about peace in the Middle, specifically in the Middle East, but I think this has a wider implication. So let's see what Richard has to say this week.
Hi, this is Richard Fields with Reports from the Fields. When Hamas attacked Israel last fall, they were following a proven strategy, best exemplified by Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden only spent a few $100,000 all in to allegedly destroy the Twin Towers and make a big hole in the Pentagon. According to an article published in The Atlantic at the time of his death in 2011, the response of the United States had cost U.S. taxpayers and inflation sufferers $3 trillion already, and the continuing costs of the so-called war on terror continue. The Department of Homeland Security, spying efforts by the NSA, continuing battles in Afghanistan until 2021, and an ongoing defense budget larger than that of the next half dozen countries in the world combined. Bin Laden's return on investment was astronomical. Bin Laden famously said that his goal was to bankrupt the United States. He essentially succeeded. The only thing that prevents our country from going bankrupt is our World War II legacy of being able to print money in the world's reserve currency. And both Democrats and Republicans are conspiring to end that exorbitant privilege. They want to confiscate the $330 billion of already frozen dollar assets belonging to Russia as part of the sanctions imposed after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. If that happens, the dollar, as the world's reserve currency, is toast, and the dollar becomes indistinguishable from any other banana republic currency, effectively making us bankrupt as a country. The Hamas attack of civilians in Israel follows the same game plan. They spent very little. The hang gliders they used to enter Israel don't cost much more than box cutters in the big scheme of things. So far, the U.S. has given Israel $158 billion in military aid. That number does not count how much Israel itself has spent. Hamas killed 1,200 Israelis and took 200 hostages. So far, Israel's war on Gaza has killed 32,800, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health. And now it appears almost certain that the bombing of the Iranian consulate in Syria, killing Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a top commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, was a victim. Embassies and consulates are traditionally considered part of their home country. So Israel has effectively attacked Iran itself in retaliation for Iran's support of Hamas and Hezbollah. Is Iran a nuclear power yet? Who knows? U.S. intelligence has been warning that they are on the cusp for years now. We know that Israel has nukes. The chances may be slim, but this has the potential of escalating into a nuclear war. Could it potentially involve the U.S.? When the two main choices for U.S. president are a narcissistic Trump and a senile Biden, it's anyone's guess. What we are observing in real time is a couple of examples of asymmetrical warfare. When one side has no intention of following the Geneva Conventions or any other rules of warfare, like a first strike targeting a civilian population, that's asymmetrical, and it gives the advantage to the most ruthless side. As a country, we and Israel have a couple of choices: being even more ruthless than the other side, or avoiding being involved in others' conflicts in the first place. Being more ruthless in this conflict context would involve taking the Trumpian advice of finishing the job and utterly destroying Gaza, and being rightly accused of genocide, which might work tactically in winning the battle in Gaza, but it would prolong the urge for revenge on the part of Arabs everywhere and prolong war for generations. Opting for peace by not funding one side or the other in battles between other countries seems like the sensible solution to me. Already, some Israelis are saying enough concerning the attacks on Gaza. If Netanyahu is compelled to rely on only Israeli funds, getting no support from us, he may be more likely to seek a peaceful solution than a total victory solution, which would be only temporary in any case. I'm Richard Fields, and that's Report from the Fields for this week. See you again next week.
I always say a pox on both their houses on this one. So what you got, Jason?
Well, there was a kind of a funny meme that had been going around after this whole fighting started between Israel and Palestine, and or the Gaza Strip. And the it was kind of a funny issue that sort of related to what Richard was talking about on the screen. And he was saying, you know, how, hey, look, we're kind of funding both of these sides. And so they had this picture where it was showing the Iron Dome missiles intercepting the missiles that were coming over from Gaza. And it was a really interesting picture because it's really, you know, you just see this incredible aerial display, really, of all these rockets. And so they had a label on the Iron Dome missiles, and it says, you know, our money paid for this. And then it had a label on the other side: somehow our money also paid for this.
Yeah, it's somehow it seems to always work like that, right? Yeah. It's we end up, the harder you try to solve these solutions, right, sometimes you just make them worse. Because we know that back in the day, Israel actually funded Hamas, thinking that the bigger threat was Hezbollah. And now it's that backfired. Again, as we know, central planners don't know what they're doing. If this is not another case of the central planners have no clue, hubris, yeah. Blame hubris if you want, but it's It fails yet again. Central planning fails yet again.
Well, you know, this is one of the crazy things about all of this foreign interventionism, too, that we wind up doing. You know, Democrats are so fearful that, you know, they think Trump doesn't know what he's doing and he's going to start a war. And then Republicans certainly think that Joe Biden has no idea what he's doing domestically. And yet both sides are very comfortable having this having us play world policemen. And it's like they don't realize that, hey, your worst nightmare is going to be in control of all of those powers if you put them there. So it's I think libertarians are the only ones really with the right idea, and that's, hey, let's just get rid of a lot of those powers. Let's tamp them down so that no matter who gets in, it's not going to be that terrible tragedy.
If the president didn't have so much power, it wouldn't really matter who it was, right?
Yeah.
They don't have anything to do. But we're talking about power, or in this particular case, loss of it. California's job market is in serious trouble, and the long term, it's not looking good because we've got the unemployment rate is now 5.2% as of January. The job openings rate in California in December was 4.4%. That's a low number compared to the nationwide average of 5.4. 16.6% share of the unemployed comes from California. Yay. Yay us. You know, and then you've got the high labor costs. 38,000 jobs were lost in the film recordings in 2023 because of the strikes and, you know, the absolute terrible quality of content coming out of Hollywood that's costing all kinds of huge losses. You know, computer camp, I cannot speak tonight, Jason. Computer programmers and engineers are down by more than 105,000 jobs here. That's just California. A lot of that's them in the Bay Area. And then the large budget deficit, you know, the government's not going to be able to help. Well, maybe. Actually, this is one of those things where I kind of disagree with my own notes on this one, is I actually think if the government has to scale down, has to generally scale back, the rest of us will be freer and the economy will, in the long term, be better off. The question is, will they actually scale back?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to see kind of a test of this in Argentina right now, because Argentina, they're dealing with massive inflation numbers, and part of what Javier Milei is trying to do is he is reducing the size and scope of government in large by reducing the federal workforce there that they have, and we're talking in the tens of thousands that he is putting down in a much smaller country than the United States.
Yeah, I think it was 70,000 people he'd promised 50,000 and he actually delivered 70,000 government layoffs.
Yeah, because as he was so I guess visually stimulatingly said, afuera, afuera, as he talked about how he was going to get rid of most of these agencies and stuff, and he's been doing it. So, but it'll be interesting to see if that has that payoff for them down there. We're getting a real-life test of this right now.
Yeah, well, they literally couldn't afford to pay for all these things. It's kind of like we're talking about colleges next week and how the explosion of bureaucracy in colleges is creating the rise in costs. And it's the same thing. As the bureaucracy, government bureaucracy raises, you've got to not only pay all those people, you've got to pay the pensions and the benefit costs and all those other costs that are kind of invisible. It's not just salary. So,
well, in layer upon layer, they're making things difficult. I mean, we just talked about the minimum wage law, so we've already heard that some fast food places are saying they're going out of business because it's just an extra cost, and maybe that's the straw on the camel's back. But then we had those gig worker laws that have been in effect now for a few years, and so I mean that also cuts down on the type of work people can do as well. So there's just all kinds of forces at play by the government making it hard for people.
As someone who works in the nonprofit and industry, the nonprofit entertainment industry, right? Yeah, it's, you know, the small plays, the small playhouses, they have an impossible time now where, you know, you used to be able to get in and people would come in, they'd give them discount rates. You know, you pay me $100, I'll come in and do your show. Well, now you've got to get hired on as an employee and all kinds of stuff. And it's just not, the numbers just don't match. And so we're struggling. So now the government says, oh, we'll fix it. We'll give you some grants and stuff. Well, now we're $38 billion in debt. There's no money for grants. So everything they've done, they make it harder to own and operate your own business. They make it harder to buy a house because of the expenses, the 20 years of anti-growth policies. And all these things are eventually catching up. And this doesn't even count the $20 minimum wage for fast food workers and all those workers who recently lost their jobs. This does not count any of that. So it's getting even worse.
Yeah. And we're seeing people vote with their feet. The chains of U-Hauls still leaving the state. You know, it's As the meme goes, Gavin Newsom, employee of the year
for several years running.
So.
Right, we're going to shift gears here a little bit. Is Telegram a national security threat? So we've got some people have security concerns over Telegram, right? Let's be honest, this is really because it's a Russian-created app, right? It's an app, the guy who created it is from Russia, and so that's really what this is really about. But it's been described as a scammer's paradise. I don't know what the scammer's paradise is any different than any other social media platform. They're all kind of scammer's paradises. Ukraine is considering banning Telegram. I think, as again, we've talked about, it's a Russian app, and so these kind of things are concerns about the Russian security services and whatnot, which if you're in a war with them, it makes some more sense. But for those of us over here in the United States, I don't think we average person should care. And again, some cybersecurity experts argue that Telegram isn't a security threat by default. Is it again, it's how you use it. It's the social engineering aspects rather than the app there itself. And so, but the question is for those of us in the United States, well, why do we really care? You know, Telegram isn't end-to-end encrypted like Messenger is now and Google's Messenger. But, you know, if you're sending your recipes to grandma or scheduling the time, or like we do with Facebook Messenger, we kind of work on the shows together. What do you care if the FSB is? Hey, good. They're wasting their time. They're wasting their time and resources following me rather than trying to do something useful. Right, I guess. I don't know. I'm not all that concerned about it myself.
Well, as we were just talking about on another show that we recently did, there was somebody who was posting stuff on Facebook, and suddenly the FBI is showing up at their house. Right? So it's sort of like, you know, who's not looking at this information? I guess is part of the crazy stuff. And this is one of the points I think that people like Rand Paul and Thomas Massey raised when they were talking about the TikTok bill to ban.
Right, it's Telegram next.
Yeah, and the idea was that, hey, look, you're already seeing the government buy this information from people like Twitter and Facebook and all these other social media companies. So if governments can already buy this information and these companies are selling it, what is exactly what is it that TikTok is doing that the other companies aren't doing?
Yeah, with the FBI showing up on people's doors because of their social media posts, and and the same government is trying to tell me to be worried about the Chinese government and the Russian government. Yeah, no, they can't come and arrest me. You can. Right, you can come and harass me. They really can't. So, yeah, what am I actually more worried about? I am far more worried about our loss of First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Tenth Amendment, Ninth Amendment, Seventh. Yeah. Anyway, all those various amendments that are allegedly there to protect us from the government, we're losing those.
Well, you know, there was something really similar talked about, too, about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, where RTV, which is like a Russian paid-for YouTube channel, and they have a lot of budgeted news shows on there that they do, and they were actually banning that in some countries. I think Canada banned it, I think we didn't ban it here. But the idea of banning, even if you say, okay, Russia's paying for this and it's propaganda, the problem is who's to say what propaganda is, right? I mean, it's sort of like for us to decide, is there any value in the information? Tucker Carlson did an interview with Putin not too long ago, and there were all these people who were really upset, but there's still some value just to hearing what Putin says, even if you don't agree with him, because at least it lets you know what it is that they think, they're doing,
Well, and the thing about listening to the propaganda of others, it's actually a warning, right? We need to be able to hear the propaganda of others. We have to trust that we are smart enough to see through it, see past it, have enough information to make a reasonable choice, a reasonable decision. But you can't if you have people censoring you, if you have our government telling you can't hear this, you can't hear that. How are you supposed to balance all these things? Especially when we know our government lies to us repeatedly. Speaking about our government lying to us repeatedly, though, Jason, we've got, there was an article a few weeks back from the New York Times about, is the deep state really awesome, right? So remember, this is the same group of people who said if you believed in the deep state, you were a conspiracy theorist. It didn't exist. You're just a conspiracy theorist. And then, well, yeah, maybe it's a deep state, but it's not really what you think. And now all of a sudden, it's awesome. The deep state is awesome. It went from non-existent conspiracy theory to now it's awesome. So this is the same New York Times, right? 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the deep state was a Donald Trump conspiracy theory, and now it's awesome because the deep state helped them get rid of Donald Trump, and so that's why they like it.
It almost makes you wonder if New York Times is an arm of the deep state.
You got to wonder, right? You've got to wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really disturbing. I think that the best government will be one that is small, simple, and transparent, because that's the only way that people are able, the citizens are able to keep track of what the government's doing. So this idea of having a deep state that is doing all kinds of stuff that the citizens just aren't that aware of, that's actually a bad thing. That's not a good thing if you really want people to sort of have some tie to their liberty.
So. Yeah, and as George Collin once said, you don't need a formal conspiracy when interests align. And when all these bureaucrats, their budgets require that they get bigger, they find more to do. If they want bigger budgets, if they want promotions, they need to find things to do. And so they will always continue to grow. That's the natural evolution of things. And so, if we not push back on it, then that's going to happen. And that's what happens, is the deep state is now serving out its own interests. And you don't need a conspiracy theory. You don't need a bunch of people in a smoke-filled room doing that. That's just the average bureaucrat seeking out their own interests. And that combined...
Well, we had something similar that ties back to an earlier story that we just talked about, and that was that $20 an hour minimum wage thing that Newsom passed. Because when they passed that, there was a closed-door meeting where everybody signed NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, in order to decide what language should be in the bill and why. I mean, how on earth can that be the public business if everybody involved is signing NDAs and they're not going to tell the public about it?
Yeah, that is crazy. How does that not violate the Brown Act, if not specifically, at least in spirit, right? That is a clear violation of the Brown Act, and maybe legally they got around it, but it's a clear violation of the spirit of the Brown Act, the spirit of transparency.
Yeah.
So we've got 1 minute left, Jason. So nuclear phase-outs, there's some journalists who are now pointing out that, closing these nuclear power plants is actually requiring us to burn more gas and coal, and us as journalists should probably point this out. So there's finally a journalist who says, hey, us journalists, we're failing people. We are actually failing the environment, we're failing our readers, we're failing our communities by not pointing out that getting rid of nuclear is actually worse than building more small plants. And we know, like, France has hundreds of small nuclear power plants, and they're quite safe.
Well, and not to mention fusion is on the horizon. I mean, they've literally had tests where, fusion is essentially the, non-radioactive form of nuclear energy, where they're combining small elements into bigger elements and gaining energy from that instead of breaking apart bigger elements, which is the one everybody's afraid of. It's going to, oh my God, it's going to, cause everybody to get sick. And it's funny, you hear people say that climate change is an existential threat, and then the same sentence they'll say, but we're not going to talk about nuclear.
That's it. We're out of time, Jason. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank the crew for working hard in there tonight. Thank you for watching. And please remember, love everybody and have a good night.